I actually, you know, I try to, I'm telling these kids, like, go move to California, go to college in California. I'm like, if you really love hip-hop, I'm like, out there, there's more of a support for hip-hop, and there's more of, like, opportunities to perform and get your stuff out there where you don't have to pay, where people aren't about making money off you. And it's crazy how it is out here, you know.
That's the truth.
Like I said, there's tons of talent. But,
do you have
know,
music
people say
online?
New York, not New York anymore. Excuse me?
Do you have music online that people could check out?
Dude, he got it ticked off last time because I found some secret subversive shit, dude. He said I wasn't having a copy.
Yeah, well, what Dino had is part of my, I have just some things, you know, it's me working. Actually, right now I'm working with this one Dominican youth that I've been working on. We're doing a mini album together. And he's the one I've been working with the most. And he's actually, when I started out, you know, he listened to reggaeton and, like, you know, all the mainstream rap stuff. And I started to show him underground, and he took it full on. And now he's full hip-hop, Mortal Technique, you know, Gangstar. He loves everything. And he's like, you know, everything I give him, he loves it. And so he's really back on that hip-hop tip. So basically, we're doing an album together. I'm doing an album with an old-school producer. Who worked with, who was Willie Colon Soundman. If anyone knows Willie Colon, this guy with Hector Lavoe, they did stuff together. Yes, this guy did.
Oh, no, you've never mentioned him before, ever, before on your entire show. No, never, once.
Oh, come on. Willie Colon.
All right, maybe once you talked about
it. Yeah. So anyway, that's going to be good because I might be able to get some Young Lords, some old Young Lords.
Really?
That's some other stuff, so. Yeah, because this guy knows, you know, a lot. It's very, it's Caribbean influence, all hip-hop, but it's all live musicians on it and all that.
Man,
but,
we got to figure out a way to get a track together, Rob. Like, seriously.
Hey, do you know anything about this
anything
guy, Andy? Do you know anything about this guy, Andy Torres?
No.
Who?
Andy Torres. He's some nutbag, says he's on to some like embezzling scheme out on the East Coast with the police and the INS.
Oh, yeah, it's Puerto Rican, of course. I know what he's talking about, yeah.
Who the hell is this guy, man? Who the hell is this guy?
We're doing horrible. And I forget, he was some sort of city handler or treasurer who basically was just taking money and using it on his family, you know what I mean? And, you know, unfortunately, Puerto Ricans in the media right now are bad. You got that dude who who kidnapped that lady and was molesting her, Puerto Rican. You have football player on the Patriots who killed someone or paid to have someone killed. You know, unfortunately, there's all this stuff. But,
Jeez. You
know, there's a lot of, unfortunately, corrupt Puerto Ricans in New York who they got prominent positions, but instead of helping the community, they just try to, you know, enrich their own pockets. And so this cat, I guess I'm not up on all the details, but I do know he had a position in the New York government, and he was just basically skimming money off the side. You know what I mean? But that's nothing new, because that's all the people in the government in Puerto Rico do anyway. They take the funds that are federal funds, and they just basically help their own people out.
That's
actually a joke
not
among
unique to Puerto Rico.
Puerto Ricans on the I know not him, but I'm just saying that, you know, he might have got it from them. But it's like, there's a joke on the island where, like, yeah, I remember a time on the island when the criminals were the people in the government. They're like, you know, the violence and all this drug shit is not, like, back in the day. This is fairly new. You know, they're like, back in the day, the criminals were just the people in the government robbing now they're like, now it's like everywhere.
No, but, see, the difference is the criminals in the government have hired street thugs to do their dirty work for them.
Exactly.
So, they still running things.
But anything, anytime, you know, Patricia, you send me something, I could do it and send it back to you. You know, we got the internet, so anything can be done.
That is true.
Fabulous world of the interwebs.
Yeah, man, let's do this. Yeah. I'm down. I'm pushing forward. I'm about to do an album. It's gonna be called Evolution. It's the evolution of me growing into who I'm going to be.
Hear, hear.
Yeah, and I think, I'd like to hear some more depth from your boy Dino, too. I remember last time you played that. It was pretty good.
What happened? What?
Your stand-up.
Oh.
Comedy.
Yeah, actually, I have a whole another routine I did since then. The first one you heard, I have a whole second one I did.
Yeah.
Maybe I should play that one after this.
Yeah.
So just for shits and giggles.
I want to hear it.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't even know
you had good
play.
Timing, and you know, I've been to a lot of comedy shows, so like, you had that presence, you had the voice, you had the good, you know, good crowd presence and everything. Keep
Man,
that,
if you know? Could, if you could see me too acting it out, because a lot of like the joke is like a little physical, you know, like I do a combination of like, you know, making statements and observations, but also there's like some definitely some physical comedy there that unfortunately does not come through the radio, but you know.
Yeah.
One day, my friend, you will see, hopefully, me opening for Dave Chappelle. please, just once. I just want to be able to say that before
Dave Chappelle and Chris Rock performed over here in New York at
together?
The Comedy Cellar.
Together?
Yeah, together.
Actually, they are on tour.
They just showed
right
up.
They're on tour right now. Dave Chappelle is going to be doing a show out in Irvine. I'm going to be going to. He's actually coming to San Francisco, too. So, y'all look it up online.
What?
The tickets are, like, really cheap, too.
What?
Yeah. They're, like, $25, $30 or something. So, yeah, I'm going. I'm going to be in the OC.
Hey, you know, do you know I gave him a Brown Beret t-shirt when he came to Santa Cruz last summer?
Dave Chappelle?
Yeah.
No, they told me, and he kept making jokes and saying brown berets, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was fucking amazing, yo. I straight gave Dave Chappelle the shirt.
You didn't get it on tape, though?
Dude, they were, like, seriously strict about no recording anything.
I'm sure.
They were seriously strict. Like, and so I'm sure they have a copy of the show, right? And I included my business card. I threw, I wrapped my business cards up in the shirts, you know, and then I just threw the shirt at him, and I was, like, 20 feet away from the dude, so I just, like, you know, just not even 20, 15, man. I just lobbed him the shirt, like, here you go. And he caught it, and he opened
it. Explain what happened, because I didn't get to hear, like, the exact story. I just hope people kind of mentioned what happened.
Yeah. Okay, so basically, last July 3rd, my birthday, I get a call from my friend who works at the Catalyst, like, hey, dude, guess what? Dave Chappelle just announced a show for the 5th of July. Like, it's almost sold out, but don't worry, I got you. He's like, it's your birthday, right? I'm like, yeah. He's like, yeah, happy birthday, dude, you and a friend, I got you.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, thank you. And then
Okay.
right? Oh, geez, twist my arm. No, but then the day of, he's like, oh, shit, dude, they're not going to use me for security. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I don't know if I'm going to be needed tonight. I'm going to go down there anyway because I want to try and get on shift. But if I don't get on shift, I can't get you in, man. I'm sorry. And I'm just like, fuck. But then he does. My boy comes through. I grab my neighbor. We go down there. He saves us, like, the closest seat in the house. Like, there was not a closer seat in the house. It was the front right balcony above the stage. And we're the corner table. And we had a couple, you know, a little pregame in the parking lot. We already got in there, had a drink, and we're just enjoying the show. And Dave was making jokes. You know, the first half of the show is just kind of him stand-up-y, kind of more like his rehearsed stuff. You know, you could tell it was things he'd been working on. But then he was just like, fuck it, Santa Cruz. Like, I'm done. Let's just hang out, blah, blah, blah. You know, and he starts talking to the crowd. And he goes, all kinds of questions, talking to all sorts of folks. It's just Dave being Dave. But he asks someone, hey, where are you from? And the person's like, San Jose. And people are like, woo. And it's like, hey, where are you from? Oh, Watsonville. Yeah! Like, you know, like, yeah. And Dave's taken back. Like, damn, San Jose, city of like 1 million people, gets like, you know, six voices. Watsonville, where the fuck is Watsonville? Like, what's that about? You know?
Exactly, man.
And so, you know, someone yells out, like, oh, yeah, South County, blah, 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 you know, strawberries. He's like, oh, right on, wow, you know. And I'm just so close. I'm like, hey, Dave, here's a gift from the Watsonville Brown Berets. And I just toss him the shirt. And he grabs it. He's like, what?
Yeah.
Brown Berets? Like Black Panther Brown Berets? And I'm like, yeah, Dave, exactly. He's like, damn. And he opens the shirt up, and it says, you know, Brown Berets represent on the front. And then on the back, it has La Causa, right? And so he's like, oh, man, look at that. La Causa. That means the cause, white people. You know, like. So he translated the shirt for the people. And then proceeded to just ask me some questions. He's like, hey, like, so what are the Brown Berets about? You know, I'm like, oh, you know, we're like about helping people, each one teach one, you know, moving forward together, like, just like looking out for each other, you know, like human advancement. We want some evolution in people's thinking. And Jay's like, damn, that's some proud, noble, amazing shit, man. You are all fucking crazy, but that's beautiful. He was all into it. And he's like, so I'm driving to Watsonville, and I get a flat tire. Like, I don't got to call AAA. I could call the Brown Berets, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, Dave, you get a flat tire in Watsonville, you fucking call me. He's like, damn, that's beautiful. He's all joking around later on, like talking to the waitress. He's like, "What are you doing when you get off?" Blah blah blah. Oh, you need isn't that? You need a ride? You need a ride, huh? Oh, well, let's call the Brown Berets. You know? Brown Berets and like
that's
and
crazy.
That.
So you got
that's
to converse
awesome.
With him.
I literally conversed with him a lot. Yeah. He asked me, you know, well, this and that. What about you know? What about the Brown Berets want? And I said something about the evolution, not revolution, because revolution's like, you know, a repetition of the same thing. And America was fighting to be free, and now it's the most, like, you know, oppressive nation on the earth, spending all this money on military and invasions and bombing and occupations. And some of the crowd was like, boo, what, fuck you. And Dave's like, hey!
Oh, yeah.
Hey! This is America! You know, like, and he actually drops this real history. It's like, you know, slaves, three-fifths of human beings, women couldn't vote, you know, like...
Yeah.
Slaves, when they did get free, couldn't vote. You know, 100 years of Jim Crow. Just, you know, the working class, the weekend. Like, he just starts dropping history after history and then, like, just referencing Native American genocide, stealing half the land from Mexico. Like, you know, all this stuff.
Damn.
All this stuff.
He broke it down and let them know. Huh?
And he's just like, and that's what fucking makes this country great, is that we can be different and respect each other and,
right.
and we learn from our history and this and that. Like, Brown Berets. Brown power. You know, he got hella deep on the crowd and all educational and then like joked about it, you know?
That's
yeah.
Beautiful.
So it really was a fucking amazing experience, man. And I got backstage, well, I didn't get backstage, but I went around to the back of the Catalyst and was hanging out, you know, after the show. And
yeah.
he actually did come out and was signing autographs and stuff. And I'm like, Dave, man, it's the second time I've met you. And I told him the shirt. He's like, oh, great, man, respect. You know, he slaps my hand.
Well,
you
met him at Rock the Bells that one year, huh?
I met him at Rock the Bells in 2006 with Immortal Technique backstage.
The Concord.
And I was trying to get a station ID from him. And he was like, oh, sorry, I can't do it then. And so I see him again after the show in Santa Cruz. And I'm like, Dave, you know, listen to that. Like, fucking such a huge fan. I hope you enjoy the shirt. He's like, oh, man, yeah, respect, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you know, 6 years ago, or, you know, 5-6 years ago, I asked you at Rock the Bells to do a station ID for me, man. And you told me you were just busy and you didn't want to work. Like, I know you just finished working, man, but could you just throw me a little more? Could you do a station ID for me? And I totally had it all written up on a piece of paper, right? Like,
yeah.
you know, this is
yeah.
Dave Chappelle, and you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Like, and I literally wrote in parentheses, then say whatever the fuck you want, you know? Like, and he was like, all right, right on, man, here, yeah, hold on, ah, you know, like, hold on a second. And this stupid chick comes up behind me and, like, just puts a camera in his face and flash photos him. And it shocks him and scares him. And he's like, ah, fuck, what are you doing? And then his manager steps in like, hey, back up. No fucking, no, back up. Like, everyone, all right, that's it. Dave's got to go.
Oh.
And he's just like, he like gives me back the piece of paper like, hey, sorry, man, I got to go.
Stupid drunk
you know?
Girl.
Yeah, and I just look at this chick and I wig on her. I'm like, thanks a fucking lot. You know how long I've been waiting to do that? Like, oh, my God, you just... Thank you. You really just that you couldn't wait for that photo, you know? Wow. Hope it's fucking worth it. Put it on MySpace or some shit. I was ticked at her.
Yeah.
I was ticked.
I would have went off on her too.
yeah.
That sucks.
But I mean, overall the night was
time.
Amazing,
third,
dude.
Third time.
There's gonna be a third
the
time.
One.
We're gonna
it's
smoke a blunt together
one.
Or something. I swear.
Yeah, it's gotta be the one.
It's gonna happen. Man, but that was a highlight of my fucking year, that's for sure.
What time is it right now, Rob? It's like 3 in the morning almost out there, right?
Rob fell asleep while we were talking about Dave Chappelle.
I guess so.
Hello.
Rob, you there?
Hello. 10-4, Roger Niner. Dodger Niner. Your copy.
I guess we lost him, y'all.
Ron Colon.
It's all right. So, what are you feeling like, Sandino?
You know, I don't know. We could...
We got one more track.
We got one more track, definitely.
It's pretty late.
It's kind of late. I think we should definitely do the track, but maybe we could goof around with some freestyles, or maybe we could just...
You know, the track that I have, though, there's
audio.
A lot of extra instrumental
section?
On there.
Yeah,
and,
is there extra? Is there some bars in there I could jump on?
Oh, yeah. Definitely one of those tracks that you can get your freestyles on.
What... Well, then, if that's the case... Hey. Oh,
okay, that's officially...
Yeah,
he's officially gone.
We love you, Ron.
Peace, Rob.
We love you. Oh, wait.
He's coming back.
Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, my phone cut off.
Don't!
Oh.
We're fucking Skype.
But yeah.
It's all good.
Hey. Yeah, so that was the second time I almost got a station ID from Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, but now I get like towards 2, so you know I'm gonna have to not get like work tomorrow. But
yeah, that's what I was saying. Isn't it like almost 3 o'clock?
That's what she was asking you when you weren't there. We're like, hey, where'd he go? Oh, he fell asleep. It's so late over there.
Yeah, get some rest,
but yeah, man.
Man,
it was great talking with y'all, man. I miss all y'all. And like I said, September, I'll definitely be back. I know I keep saying this, but it should be for sure, you know.
Well, let me know when you come back up here, and I will make my way back up here, too.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, I'm driving. Yeah, I actually might be passing through L.A., so I'll let you know.
Oh.
I'm becoming one of my boys, actually, probably a couple of my boys, but then my nephew. They're going to, you know, we're all going to drive back. We're going to pass through this. I'm not trying to go through all the South, but I'm going to stop by. I got some friends in Miami. I'm going to stop by New Orleans.
Oh, sweet.
And, yeah, but we're going to try to skip Texas. I'm not trying to get fucked with no one over there.
I highly suggest that you do.
Hey, Austin's awesome.
Yeah, except for Austin.
Austin.
No,
Austin gets a pass.
Austin is a great place that just, unfortunately just happens to be surrounded by Texas.
If we're going to stop, it's going to be Austin.
Just like take it as a break, you know, partway through.
Yeah. But yeah, man, it was good talk to y'all.
All right, man.
Hope we didn't bore Shout anyone.
Out.
Shouts out to Chipster and his mustache.
Oh, my God. Have you seen it lately?
Chipster. That's the homie.
Nah, he went back.
Yeah. He'll be out here in Santa Cruz coming up pretty soon. So anyone that wants to see the Chipster, he'll be here when I leave.
Exactly.
Oh, let me shout that out real quick, actually. Anybody from Los Angeles area listening right now, I will be hosting at Urban Underground in Lincoln Heights Friday night. Because J Live is performing, so it's gonna be an exciting show. It's my first time seeing him perform. It's definitely one of my biggest inspirations as far as what I do as a performer. And he's just a sick poet, like overall, like even being an MC, but just like a sick poet too. So J Live, LA, Friday night. See you there.
There.
Do. Well, Rob, please get some rest.
Shout out, homie. So good to talk to you, too, yeah.
Yeah, it's good to talk to y'all. Y'all play your new comedy routine. We can hear that.
Yeah.
I want to hear that.
Okay, what do you say we do that? We'll do the track, the one with the comedy. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that would be really good.
Yeah, we got a little track here. Me and Patricia have been working on.
Take care.
All right, you take care. See you soon. Good
night, man.
Good night.
All right. Okay, see you. Bye.
And coming up next, it's the late edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Today is the 29th of May, so hey, hey. Here we are in studio land, and welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz's Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I am the infamous Bathrop Spear, and I'm trying to manage my usual herd of unwanted guests who have somehow invaded the studio. But you know how that is. It's just the way it goes. Actually, I will threaten to name their names and expose their parentages if they get out of line. Anyway, we have that, is he a doctor, or is he simply a meditation mystic from the north, Michael O'Grady, and then the former radio broadcaster who is known as...
Prayer Freedom.
Senor Freedom. Senor Freedom. Senor Liberté. We'll call him Liberté. And I'm going to begin, and I apologize for being late. I overslept. That's what happens. Quiet over there. That's what happens when you nap a bit too much. If you're going to chat, move away from the mic. Thank you so much. In any case, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, and if you want to call in, you can. We have a call-in number, 831-427-3772, not hard, 427-3772, or if you like to write things, FRSC, 427-FRSC, those are the acronyms, Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you want to pass on goodies to us, we will be more than ready to take your money, your equipment, whatever you got, at freakradio.org, all one word, all small letters, freakradio.org. It's also the place to get to us on computer. If you go to freakradio.org and you click on the little red dot on the top of the transmitter icon. I know it sounds like a treasure hunt, but that's what it is. Freakradio.org, the little red dot at the very tippy-tippy top of the antenna area. The icon that sits up there, and try to avoid any other distracting voices because they can be distracting. So I'm going to be doing rush through a number of tapes today, and actually I will not be able to get through a third of what I need to do, but I'll start doing it anyway. I'm going to begin with something that happened, gosh, what was it? Today is Thursday. I think it was Monday or Sunday. Actually, Liberté and I, or Freedom as he's sometimes known, began to, actually, and you too, Michael O'Grady, you were there as well, began to stalk the mall in order to get a very precise measurement of how much of the mall, what percentage of the mall is still actually usable as real First Amendment activity space. That is to say, space where you could, sit down and, or just to sit down, for one thing, where you could rest, space where you could set up a political table, space where you could actually, perform with a busk, as they call it, with a cap or a open guitar case.
First Amendment expression.
Or possibly a place where you could vend items, like
for donation.
Like the scarves. You can actually vend your own artwork without even doing it for a donation, saying this has a price under the famous White City of Sparks versus White decision, which has been reluctantly agreed to by the shitty attorney, John Barrasoni.
Also, veterans can vend, too.
So we're going to try to figure out, thank you, we're trying to figure out what percentage, first of all, how much of the mall is actually left percentage-wise. I mean, there's a lot of, if you were at the last city council meeting, the one before last, you would have heard, I think, Scott Collins say that, Don Lane, I think, said so, one of the two, or maybe both, that there were, 40 or 50 spots now where you supposedly are able to engage in, those activities. And that when the new boxes are painted on the sidewalk, which will allow you to, for example, be next to buildings from which you are completely banned right now. You cannot be within 14 feet of a building seated or with a display device. That's illegal. That there will be the same 40 or 50 spots, just somewhat moved around. He was put in a positive way. He said, there are going to be lots of spaces, and then there are lots of spaces now, was sort of the force of his words. Of course, this is the crassest nonsense, and we wanted to actually get very specific about how much space there actually is on the mall and how much it's been taken up by, direct commercialization, like the sidewalk cafes that you have to spend. An average of $5 to $10 and to sit down in. I mean, you can get a cup of coffee for $3, $2.50. But it's, you have to buy a pizza or you have to buy a sandwich. I want to say they litter the mall, but they are certainly a prominent feature of the downtown Pacific Avenue Mall. So we began at the bottom of Pacific Avenue, or is it the top?
Top.
One of the two. And it was at the end of Pacific Avenue, or perhaps the beginning.
Clock tower.
And it was close to, it wasn't the clock tower, but it was actually at the place where the veterans statue is by Jamba Juice, as you were saying there, Freedom. And across from the infamous, we don't want no stinking backpacks, Lulu Carpenter's place.
Nut job.
And I'm going to start playing the tape, and we will stop for comments, and also for your thoughts and comments. And I'll also probably stop when we get bored of hearing this. You have to be 14 feet from this, 14 feet from that. But you'll get the gist of how we were working. And our eventual product, some of which is already posted on the Santa Cruz Indie Media, thanks to you, Free, that you can actually see.
So I snuck it on the end of one of those threads. What was your DAP thread?
What's the title of it? Actually, that's another thing that's coming up today, hopefully, if we have time, to talk about the two things that actually happened at City Council 2 days ago. Another attack on the rights of people downtown, and the charity given out by the Homeless Lack of Services Center, which is now going to be conditioned on your entering a sort of a prison-like environment where you'll have ID cards and a fence and a security gate, all in the name of public safety. I guess some of the claim that the reason we went after the sidewalk spaces that were seriously cut back in September, although they've been seriously cut back, actually the real slashing happened in 2002 and 2003 and began in 1994 as a way of essentially giving the merchants and those who are a veto over who can be on the downtown Santa Cruz in a comfortable way.
On a traditional public forum, the sidewalk.
And that, of course, is what we are now fighting to restore and to reverse. Some of us have been going at this for decades. It doesn't just feel like decades.
Is it easy to do?
It's actually been decades. So, no, it's not. All right, so let's hear some of that. And again, if you want to see some of the visual action aspect, because that's more impressive than listening to the audio, but we don't have television here in the studio. I suppose we have iPodism if I ever learned how to do it.
Just the NSA secret cam in a corner there.
And, of course, you can go to Indie Media, Santa Cruz Indie Media, which is at www.indiebay, I-N-D-Y-B-A-Y, one word, small letters, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. Or you can just, Google or, Bing or whatever.
Probably going to have to look at See More Local News because it's run down the page now because of all this action in Salinas.
If you look at, if you search for Norse, you'll see a variety of stories. And one of the stories, it contains your video, which essentially is a video of some of what we're about to hear now. You took the choicest parts and you put them up, and they show me kind of, gesticulating, well, look at all this open space. You can't use any of it. It's all been declared illegal. Look at all this space taken up by the cafes. How much is actually left? And we found actually that there was zero space between the beginning of Jamba Juice on Pacific Avenue. There's a little bit of space as you move away from Jamba Juice toward the town clock.
Yeah, in that little circle thing with the echoes.
In the small circle where you can sit down and where you'll sometimes see activists and groups being there. But the only legal space is, there's no legal space at all to either perform, to vend, to panhandle peacefully, to sit down, anywhere all the way up to the bookshop Santa Cruz. There is theoretically a space in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz in the free zone, even though
An exempt area?
I think it is an exempt area,
it's not made
very clear. Although, if you look at the little discs in the sidewalk, it says free, and there is a. And I don't think I'm talking about you either, free.
My zone!
And there are little discs that right around the Tom Scribner violin statue, for those of you who know what that is. He's a musical saw player, actually, not a violin player, but. And that's right in front of the Bookshop Coonerty, or Bookshop Santa Cruz, as they call themselves. Anyway, let's hear some of this, and let's hear from you. And anything you want to say, Dr. Michael O'Grady, on the situation?
Not at this moment, thank you.
All righty, so let's get into it. So we're down here on Pacific Avenue, and it is May 24th, 2014. We're examining how much space is left for street performers, tablers, craft people, people who just want to sit down on the sidewalk somewhere legally, and people who are panhandlers or peaceful spare changers. We're in front of Curio's store, and everywhere from this Curio's shop, which is right next to the Chocolat and Bookshop Santa Cruz, all the way down to the end of the mall where Verve and Jamba Juice are, there is no legal place to do anything of this kind, whether to sit, register voters, spare change. It's all been declared illegal, and it's kind of interesting because if you look down the sidewalk, you'll see vast open spaces of area, and you would think that these areas are legal.
Yes.
So
Why is that? You know, I mean, obviously it has to do with commercialization signs, which merchants have and which are around. Although, you know, they're not blocking the sidewalk usually, but they are taking up space. And, of course, there are these huge areas of merchant commercialization of sidewalk cafes that are sitting on the public right-of-way, like Oshokala. And then there are these areas in front of these green kiosks, the Penny Ice Creamery, which is in front of the bookshop Coonerty, or the bookshop Santa Cruz, which takes up a huge swath of the sidewalk. Now, ironically, there's a statue in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz of Tom Scribner, who is a musical saw player, who would have been arrested daily for doing this kind of what he's doing downtown. He would not have tolerated the privatization of space by these businesses downtown. It's the criminalization of homeless people, street performers, street culture generally, of which this man was an advocate. He was a defender.
This man being saw player Tom Scribner, who lived in the St. George Hotel back in the early 80s. I was actually around in the early 70s for a period of time. And I believe so. He was a communist as well as
being communist.
I think he was IWW, which went from there to here and there, here to there. The amazing thing that we found, and I guess I probably mentioned it in the audio tape as well, is if you stand, let's say, in front of the Penny Ice Creamery at the little green kiosk, and you look toward the town clock, on both sides of the sidewalk, there is absolutely no place for a person to sit down on the sidewalk legally, no place for them to ask for spare change, no place for them to sit down and play music with a guitar and ask as a busker, and no place to sell scarves or even register voters. Zero. There is zero space. That's remarkable, you know.
Well, we have the hard numbers for that as well. I think I remember them. We looked at, where do we go up to Chocolat or say, or the Bookshop Center? It was about 1,500 squares. Out of those, 51 used to be legal places. Now there's only 10 squares, and those are all up in that circle at the top there past Jamba Juice. And there was like 276 merchant, you know, enclosures. So they have about 20% of the sidewalk, whereas free speech has less than 1%, 0.75%.
And that is if you go beyond Jamba Juice all the way toward the area where there's a actually one of the few remaining planter seating areas, which is there. You know, there are very few of those left. I think there are two or three.
That's the one where if you stand on a star, you can hear your echo back from the little semicircle there.
Oh, really? I don't know that. I mean, I think actually somebody told me that. But the other thing is, the reason that the kiosks take up such a huge swath of space is that it's not just that the kiosk itself is, you can't be there 14 feet from the actual little green kiosk. Those were originally set up to be nonprofits and now, of course, have been commandeered and profiteered by businesses like Alfredo's, Alfresco's, I think it is. That's further up the ice creamery. I guess the Downtown Association, which is not a nonprofit. It's it's a merchant interest group next outside of New Leaf Market. All these have taken over, and of course there's the Mexican kiosk, Mexican food kiosk that's right also near the New Leaf Market.
Who gets the rent from it?
And these are leased by the city to these profitable groups, profit-making groups. And what happens is that they set up chairs around them at a radius of about, 10, 12 feet. But you are not allowed to be within 14 feet of the outer rim of the chair area. So it sets up a huge forbidden zone around each of these kiosks, essentially to, protect the privacy, the commercial viability of the people eating there might be the rationale. But the real reality is, since ordinary middle-class people are ignored if they violate the so-called downtown ordinances about sitting in these areas out the forbidden zones 14 feet next to a building, it's to go after people who are poor, who they don't want to see downtown, particularly young and, you know, punkish looking or gothish looking or travelers from out of town. They want to move them along. They want to get them out of here. And this has become particularly prominent in the last year or two as a way of getting rid of people who they are now terming a public safety hazard, even though there's no indication whatsoever that these people are a public safety hazard to any greater degree than people who are in their houses, such as the guy who, you know, killed two police officers a year ago, Baker and Butler. We won't talk about whether he did a good service or a bad turn to the community by doing that. But he, in fact, was not a homeless person. He was a housed person. And, you know, homeless people have...
We see public safety. Talk about Salinas. The cops are a public safety issue if you don't like being shot.
Right. And in Santa Cruz, if you're concerned about your civil liberties, the cops are a public safety hazard as well, insofar as the public safety depends on civil liberties being respected and supported for all classes, not just for those who have the money and the thuggery, you know, and the cachet to get past... the private security forces and the hosts and so forth, or have their own private domain where they don't need public space because they have so much private space they can roam as free as they want. Anyway, let's hear some more from this, unless you have some more thoughts, either of you.
We'll talk some more later.
Let's hear some more. And again, you can call in to give your thoughts. Maybe you think we're not being fair to the Scott Collins, the avid assistant to the assistant city manager who packages all this crap and sells it as some kind of... you know, genuine information. It's really kind of depressing because Scott's a nice guy. And I've talked to him in other ways. He seems like, you know, he's accessible as a person. He tries to give you the agendas and so forth. But he's really giving us
you
all
of
this.
You are what you do.
And yet, unfortunately, he has to be characterized just as police officers need to be characterized, or businesses, or anyone else, or homeless activists, for that matter. If they fall short, and if they really are engaging in abusive behavior, they need to be named on the air for what they do. Because that's what we call a public safety announcement, rather than a public safety hazard. But I tend to be broad-minded in more senses than one in my approach to these issues, and so I want to, you know, I always have a lot of differences with numerous homeless activists because, you know, it's a field in which people disagree and tempers get hot and we turn against each other because we can't unite in the way we should against the broader problems.
It's because we're being divided and conquered by the other side. We just get a squabbling, and that's what we should be doing to them. That's what we should be.
Yeah, I don't think they're actually
association from the, you know. The
I agree. I don't think that they're actually.
There's a lot of merchants that don't like paying that downtown association tax.
Yeah, I don't
for
think.
Those stupid homes.
I mean, I don't think they're actually trying to get us into the, you know, to squabble with each other. I don't think they have to try. I think people who are frustrated and locked in increasingly smaller spaces, in a certain sense, and who feel powerless are inclined to attack each other often than go after the people that are making them powerless.
Well, think of these little spaces that they have. I mean, there's people are going to fight to get these spaces, and that'll cause a division among the artists downtown.
You know, I've heard that said, but I actually haven't noticed a lot of that. Have you noticed that? I mean, I was one of the criticisms I made last September, but in all candor, I've not heard much of people fighting for these small spaces. I have seen, however, people just ignoring.
Yeah, that's what's... Because they're not enforcing it strictly yet.
Right, they're not enforcing it. And that is the other thing that I keep mentioning was not brought up when they talked about, oh, well, we're going to make the whole problem much better, bring back the great Morgani, the accordion player who declared he wasn't coming back after police threatened him, by putting little painted boxes in.
That's next to a building because he will only perform next to a building. This is all just done for him.
Right. I mean, it certainly is, or the outrage, the outcry that he provoked as the real rationale for this. You know, so the fact is, however, that there's, you know, there's no increase in, no restoration of the space at all. So the fact at that meeting when this was discussed, nobody said, you know, people are violating the laws right and left now because it is so obviously abusive. And they
that means we have a crime wave and we have to put more money into the police. You know, see how it works to serve their own purposes?
Of course. The latest public safety task force. And indeed, in today's or yesterday's Sentinel, when they talked about another thing that showed up at the City Council and passed, which is the Downtown Accountability Program, DUP, or DAP, as they call it, Downtown Accountability Program, is that it was done to deal with public safety problems like camping and public intoxication. And of course, the major aspect of public intoxication is by people who are housed and have money and who run around and have parties downtown and essentially throw their money into the town by, you know, buying liquor at different places and then wandering around drunk. I don't see much of that, but I think it's fair to say you're more likely to see that if you come down in the weekends at night or in the summer. And, you know, I'm not aware that that might actually be a public safety hazard. What it is for other, for people, and alcoholics who are intoxicated, and homeless outside, I'm talking about homeless alcoholics, distinguished from the housed alcoholics, is they are, sort of a slap in the face to the community in a number of ways. First, you know, they're saying, you know, look, you think this is a good society, look what you got around you, people who are, you know, a public eyesore in a number of ways. They're an eyesore because they are in need, and they've abandoned sort of the basic kind of cloak of human dignity that we have around ourselves, because we have privacy, we have places to live. We have enough of an income to make like we are in good shape. That becomes, you know, the great. We don't want to reveal our needs to each other because that would make it we actually, you know, which how shitty shape most of us are most of the time in terms of material needs and also emotional and spiritual needs. You know, we could be helping each other there. Anyway. Getting lost in the thread because I'm going off into a variety of subjects like the Downtown Association, Downtown Accountability Project and the business of alcoholics. What we were doing here again is we are measuring the spaces that are actually available for people who are ordinary folks and also for street culture folks, because poor people do try to link up with each other in various ways. And the downtown has been a classic place where they have linked up.
Traditional public forum.
And for those who are legally minded, it has been in the past, the sidewalks have been declared a traditional, actually since 1938 at least, a traditional public forum. That there was a phrase used by the Supreme Court in a labor case where they talked about the parks being a traditional forum from time immemorial. But in fact, in the United States, that hasn't been the case. They've allowed governments to overrun the civil liberties of people on sidewalks until the mid 20s or 30s. That's when they actually began having other protective decisions. Or am I wrong about that for you?
Well, I was going to say the reason that we have all these ridiculous laws, 14 feet, I mean, they would like to just say nobody downtown, you know, unless you're spending money, but because it's a traditional public forum, they have to use what they call the time, place, and manner. They allow you a small area, so they haven't completely extinguished your rights.
Well, that's certainly true, but I'm trying to essentially explode the myth that this is somehow time immemorial a public forum. It's not time immemorial a public forum.
It is
since the mid-20s, it's been declared by the courts.
By the courts.
Actually, it's the mid-30s in a case called CIO versus, I don't know, so there's some city was trying to demand permits for union organizing groups on the sidewalk, and they got kicked down. And that began to grow as the Supreme Court expanded those rights, and now they're contracting them again. Or let's put it this way, they actually are remaining silent while the cities contract.
No one's testing these.
Right.
Why.
Although...
I mean, the sit-lie laws, where they completely extinguish them, lost in federal court. But
well, not in Seattle, where they originated, and not in San Francisco.
They've lost some places. Because if you leave a place where you can sit and lie, then you've allowed it.
I'd love to see. You have to bring that up to me, because I've not noticed that there's been any successful challenges.
Because here
against,
you can sit at certain places.
I mean, any successful challenge to the sit, can't sit here, can't sit there, if you can sit in these small, diminished areas, which is what they're using as their excuse. But I've not seen the laws thrown out anywhere.
Well, that's the issue. Is it adequate? It has to be an adequate amount of space left, and we're finding that it isn't. Less than 1% is not adequate, especially when the merchants are getting 20% of the sidewalk. Fuck that shit.
Well, that's rather...
We didn't even really count the kiosks.
That's nasty language to apply.
We didn't really count the kiosks either. We were just counting those fenced-off areas. If we had counted the kiosk, it would probably up around 40%.
Well, I didn't count the actual space on which the kiosks sit. I count the area around the kiosk.
Oh, you did count all the areas?
Right, but not the space on which the kiosks sit.
It should, because it's commercial space.
That's right. The kiosks, with the kiosks have been built right in the middle of the sidewalk. There, I guess there are 1, 2, 3, 4 kiosks.
They're getting money.
You're talking at a distance and
you get, right up to
get a little closer.
Well, the city is getting rent for those kiosks, so it is commercial space, right?
Of course, yes, it is commercial space. So let's hear some more from the actual walk-along that we did. Actually, before this, we actually were counting the 2x2 square feet squares that are in the on the in the sidewalk. If you, there are a few places where there are different sizes, but they're generally the squares that are actually outlined in the sidewalk as on Pacific Avenue are 2x2, more or less. And that's 4 square feet each. You are not allowed a more than 12 square feet currently under the current law to set up a display device. You have to be another 12 feet away from another display device. And display device means essentially anything capable of holding tangible things. So it could be used, it could be a backpack sitting down, particularly if you have a sign on top of your backpack. Or if you have, you know, some of your jewelry that you're trying to exchange.
It means anything that touches the ground, I think, right?
Well, no. Your feet touch the ground. Your ass can touch the ground. You can sit down on the sidewalk without being yourself a display device. And in fact, that is
In fact, it
has to touch the ground. But everything, anything that touches the ground, is not necessarily a display device.
Right,
so, so I mean, you can have, for example, a cup hooked to your coat. That's and be playing the guitar, and we think it's legal. No one has yet been challenged on it, but there hasn't been a really clear statement that it's legal. For example, if you look in the little pamphlet, they say they will tell you you can play music anywhere, but they will not say you can play music for donation anywhere, provided you have the cup on your person or the your you know what the device you have for getting money on your person.
Well, the law specifically says a device that stands freestanding and it's parallel to the pavement or something. It says a table.
They do talk
a hat.
They talk about freestanding devices, which has been another restriction that has been added. That is to say, no blankets are allowed on the sidewalk as display devices.
Because a homeless person could easily carry a blanket around, whereas a table is a fucking problem.
And also, I know Huff as a group.
Even a table is tough for Huff.
We used blankets because they would sometimes take our display devices because we challenged the move-along law every hour. Another very bizarre and rare restriction that Santa Cruz has, unlike other cities, requires you to move every hour, can't go back to the same place for 24 hours. Right. You have to be 100 feet away. And considering that there's no spaces in many places, that's quite a demand on people.
Yeah. Well, there's the time part of the time, place, and manner.
Yeah. Well, again, this whole, you know, I mean, I know it can be useful if you're considering legal options to consider what they say your civil liberties are, and I think that's one way to go.
Also, there's exemptions, like the coffee protest we were doing. The only one location was adequate in front of the coffee house we were picketing, so I don't think they never tried to move us along there either, because I think we would have won in court, and I think they knew it.
Well, I don't know about that. I know that I think they wanted to avoid the protest growing, and in the past, when there was a protest that began after, for example, the 1994 sit-down law, which originally banned sitting all over the city, anywhere, on any sidewalk, unless it's an emergency or a parade or whatever, they began, at first they ignored people sitting, and they ignored the protesters. And then they went after Food Not Bombs for serving free food at Cathcart and Pacific in front of what is now Taqueria Vallarta, which was then a vacant lot where Ford's department store had been before the earthquake, and it had been torn down. It was a lot. And Food Not Bombs fed there. And first they came, and they threatened the people who were serving food. And then the next week they came to threaten the people who were sitting down. And at that point people showed up in huge numbers. Of course, it was a much different demographic then, 20 years ago, than it is now. I think the reason they're not going out, they didn't go
had
after
more real Americans in this town back then.
No, they didn't go after protesters in this last September, and we were there 4 or 5 times, violating the downtown ordinances and urging people to sign petitions to reverse this latest tightening of the screws, this latest and a tightening around the neck, essentially, on street culture. And they didn't go after us because I think they were afraid of something similar happening happened, and you know, getting more protest.
Right.
It would show people how outrageous it was. They wanted to do it the slow cook,
quietly,
the slow cook, raise the heat slowly,
like the frog in a pot,
yeah.
Exactly. Another thing we found out, we did a poll there and asked people how they felt about these downtown ordinances, and it was unanimous. I mean, there was only maybe a third were still against us on the coffee issue, but everyone was on our side in terms of the downtown ordinances. And yet, those ordinances continue to get passed and continue to get worse. They are not supported by the majority of the people in Santa Cruz.
When was this poll
done? Back in February, March.
We were challenging backpack bigotry, I believe, the idea that merchants and businesses or cafes are not just public spaces are being, you know, they're trying to exclude homeless-looking people, but also private businesses. It's part of a general sickness went so far as to even people who can pay money, like Dan Madison, also known as Sean Deluge, who was excluded from an internet company that's very famous, Cruzio.
They want to offend the community.
Yeah, I mean, it is really, you know, it's like saying, well, we don't allow them blacks, because it's not that we got nothing against the blacks. It's just you know, we just don't want the Klan upset, you know, and that, you know, we don't, and there's a lot of people who have, we have to respect their traditions and their feelings, and it's the old argument that, of course, doesn't hold much water now because it's become discredited because the blacks.
Jim Crow for the homeless.
Some blacks have some power.
It's okay for the homeless to be somewhere else, but not downtown with the rest of us.
Right. And it's not even okay for them to be in town at all because now there's an attack on people who are trying to survive by hiding under the Poganip and hiding and trying to find legal places to sleep. And there's no legal place for people to be at night. Although you, I guess, have been known to lurk at the homeless lack of services center at the Paulie Loft, along with 45 other people. How's that going? Are you almost finished with your month tenure?
I'm almost finished. It's a 30-day stint. I'm almost finished. So interesting enough.
Yeah, I mean, all these latest measures are. Come with the sugar coating that what they're really trying to do, and that this happened with the downtown accountability project. They're trying to encourage people to get into treatment, and they're trying to encourage people to obey the law and to stop being those criminal people who just can't. They got this sleep addiction. They have a sleep addiction. You know, they somehow reason have to
stop
sleep at night.
Sleeping.
You know, they've got to learn to sleep at the right times, which would be during the day, but not visibly. I mean, no, it's legal to sleep during the day on public property. It's legal to sleep on provided you're not lodging, of course. Now that the and that's another interesting question. But no, it's in fact if people are in fact some people acknowledge they're sleeping during the day and they haven't been bothered under lodging law. Lodging law requires a misdemeanor trial, unlike the sleeping ordinances, which only require going to a judge.
Say that one for the activists, like my brother, who got 2 years for lodging.
That would be Gary Johnson, Ground Zero Gary, who is now working very hard on.
Let's not say what he's doing, but the revolution continues.
Let me just say he's
helping Huff. Let's just say that
there are people that
in spite of his feelings towards Robert.
It's no secret that you know various people are helping monitor the police department's mythologies that are being spread as truths that are actually really bigoted lies that have to do with claiming that there's a public safety hazard from homeless people. What there is that there's a bunch of people, a very strong pressure group, Take Back Santa Cruz, and other allied groups, and the Santa Cruz neighbors who elected Robinson, who's now our mayor, Rattlesnake Robinson, I call her. And there's also Pamela Comstock. I haven't thought of an adequate name for her yet, but one of these days I will. And, you know, the people that all go along with this, who are, and also those who have been long entrenched in the city staff, which is the more powerful and more long-lived group headed by Martine Bernal, who is the city manager, who gets paid more than anybody else in the city. I guess it figures in, you know, 200,000 plus. But we are getting, you know, I want to point out, I just got a report that we finally were able to wrest from the police department the actual, not just the citations and who got them and who gave them and where they were given and for what so-called crime they were given downtown. And we're talking about the downtown ordinance citation primarily. We wanted to look at all the citations so we could sense what kind of police power is being put into the attack on street culture and how much is being devoted to real crime, you know, theft, burglary, assault, things that, you know, you and I would agree are bad no matter who does them. Whereas sleeping is bad only if a person who's homeless does it. And that's outside because it's not bad at all, of course, but it's being treated as a crime.
And again, because all this police resources are wasted downtown on these things that aren't relieving crimes, and real crimes are perpetuated against the residents of Santa Cruz, and we're the victims because of the misallocation of our police resources.
And so what we're trying to do is, just as we're trying to walk up and down the avenue and find out how much space has been stolen, we're also trying to find out how much police resource has been stolen from the community by directing the police or allowing them to direct us to direct them, because often this comes from the police department, to go after people that whose crime is sitting next to a building, you know, whose crime is having a display device in the wrong place, whose crime is saying to a police officer, it's my right to be on the sidewalk, fuck off and leave. Or they can put it more, officer, why are you doing this? And they get, the officer acts as though, you know, it's a capital offense to challenge the word of the armed gunman who's coming after you and telling you to move along.
Never challenge unless you got a camera.
And so the fact is, this kind of documentation that you'll hear us doing some more of once I stop talking, which may be never, is important because it really shows you the incredible waste of time that is going on and the waste of resources by the police department that actually itself is really a kind of crime against the community. And it's being done for a private interest because some people who own property or who have families here and are in better circumstances are nervous about having homeless people in the area.
Also, remember those kiosks, that money goes straight into the government to pay those pensions and stuff. They're just insuring their pensions. And basically, it's fascism. The government and the business conjoined at the hip. That's fascism. And when you lose your rights under fascism, almost always.
Well, a lot of people think that the F word is thrown around too freely, you know, and therefore, and also that what some people call fascism, other people call a sensible partnership between business and government to protect the safety, sort of a neoliberal approach, where we understand that you've got to lock up the crazies, force the homeless people into non-existent shelters or, I don't know, to do programs that don't exist either, that will get them away from bothering us by making us feel bad to see them around. And also, you know, we've heard about stop them from sleeping nearby when some people are stealing stuff. Some people are engaging in bike theft. That's continued high.
There is a percentage of homeless that do commit crimes.
And certainly a percentage
but
of house
then,
people,
you know,
too.
Arrest them for those real crimes like theft, not sleeping, which is a fucking right.
Anyway, that's our endless cry here. Let's hear some more about what we did to try to document the real crimes, which are the seizures of public space, and the it's kind of a crime against it's a crime against humanity. I'm not sure how it would be termed at Nuremberg or at by International War Crimes Tribunal, which has to do with painting a group as in a way that makes them an object of attack, and that's what's going on in Santa Cruz. Homeless
people. The United Nations has already said that we're guilty of what is it? You're familiar with what I'm talking.
You know,
about.
I'm trying to find that. Actually, that's one of the things that Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with, is trying to get a UN observer to come to Santa Cruz, or for us to send them the documentation that there is a steady, increasing, unjustified attack on homeless people, which constitutes a human rights violation under both recent national claims about there should be no criminalization of homeless people as a group, mm-hmm. but also the international, as you were saying, Freddie, a UN determination about that is a form of, I can't use the word war crime because I don't know if that's what it is, but it's something similar to that.
They should call for sanctions and, you know, boycott of American goods. Should take it a step further.
So
would change it immediately. All of a sudden, the homeless would be welcome.
Well, perhaps. Or perhaps people would start eating the homeless because they'd be so hungry. You never can tell. Let's hear some more about where the three of us walked the avenue trying to find spaces to sit.
Ironically, is a free zone. If you look here, you'll see these discs on the sidewalk, which make this very small square area a so-called free zone, similar to Bush's protest pens or Obama's protest pens that made it legal to protest only in very limited areas. That's what, of course, the city council is considering for crafts, for voting tables, for anybody who wants to engage in any First Amendment activities. That's all going to be only permitted within these small, painted-off boxes. That's the plan of the City Council.
So Robert, before September, how many of these squares could you set up a table in or do some busking?
Well, it was limited even then, because even then you had to be 10 squares away from a crosswalk, and 5 squares away from...
And let me actually make a correction here. This is something that I was mistakenly doing yesterday when we began trying to determine how much space there was from Laurel all the way down to Lincoln on the sidewalks, and the answer is not much. There's some, but there's not much. The actual 14-foot forbidden zone, previously a 10-foot forbidden zone prior to September of last year, is not from crosswalks. It is from intersections, and it is from curbs. So, not curbs. Curbs where there are curbs around a... where streets intersect each other. Intersections is the better word. But the word crosswalk is not used. So there are actually fewer crosswalks in Santa Cruz than there are intersections, because there's a lot of intersections. So actually that increases the forbidden space and decreases almost to nothing the space available. Now, I will actually pull out the ordinance and give you the exact wording before the next interruption. But the other thing that has to be said is that... this so-called free zone, and there are two of them. One of them is in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, as mentioned, around the Scribner statue, the musical saw player. Another is up in front of O'Neill's, across from the Cinema 9 Theater. And the so-called free zone is a zone where you are allowed to place display devices, play music with an open guitar case and so forth, without worrying about whether you're 14 feet for this, that, or the other. But the move-along law, which says you have to move every hour if directed to do so, is still in force. So you can't be there for very long. The space.
Is Arizona exempt?
No, I don't think so. They were created in 2003 because Scott Kennedy had promised in 2003 when the move-along law passed that there would be free zones. But of course, the zones, and we had them on free radio debating activists who said that was ridiculous, and that he was essentially killing First Amendment activity downtown at the behest of the merchants. And Kennedy is now dead, has gotten a positive rap, at least from me, for some things, and not necessarily but from you, Free, I know, for his Resource Center for Nonviolence founding and for his work in tax resistance against war policies by the U.S. government. And I would say, I don't think you support his support for the peace process between the Israelis and the Palestinians. I don't think you agree with that necessarily. No? Not sure. Okay. Okay, fair enough. I mean, there are some people like Rotkin who has socialist rhetoric about issues about the need for health care and national civil liberties protections, and has long been on the board of directors of the American Civil Liberties Union, but he's a five-time mayor, who still comes to city council as a citizen. He spoke on Tuesday supporting the homeless lack of the new security gate, concentration camp, prison atmosphere at the homeless resource center. It'll be happening in 90 days now. And they'll have ID cards. At least that's the demand.
Who's paying for that?
City.
Well, I can also believe that it was impossible to have a 24-hour bathroom, and we still have one down there on front of the street.
Yeah, and he reflected the views of a particular constituency, but he liked to claim he got it by going door to door and talking to everybody in Santa Cruz. And he was, that's the one thing. The downtown is it's a constant mantra he uses.
But we've repeated that. We've gone downtown and asked people on the streets, and they're all against these downtown.
Well, I'd like to really say that we've refuted it, and that I haven't gone door to door like Rotkin. I haven't run for office. I don't know how much he has either. We don't know how much he's gone door to door, but that has been his claim.
That's a standard authoritarian power trip. So I'm the expert because I've gone door to door. You haven't gone door to door. You don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
We've done a poll. No one else has done a poll.
Well, it was a poll of very limited size. Kind.
You don't shoot your own foot. Rotkin didn't say I only went to 3 or 4.
Well, I try to be honest about because we're interested in knowing what the facts are, not just what we want to happen.
It was a random poll
small sample, to be true.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't give an exact percentage. I don't know if it was a third. I think it was a third, because I was there that evening when he said that. But it's impossible for one man to do one-third of the whole city. Impossible.
Yeah, and for people who talk about the downtown being a problem, there's a lot of this whipped up by the mainstream media, like the Santa Cruz Sentinel, which plays very heavily on crime. Where real crime that happens, they broadcast, you know, everything the police. Of course, the criminals in power are not given. They don't talk about, and they don't talk about, you know, the bank foreclosures in Santa Cruz County, and they don't talk about, you know, the foreclosure fraud situations that are happening and so forth. Anyway, let's hear some more.
My crosswalk, 5 squares away from a building, 5 squares away from a kiosk area. This area was legal to be in.
Right here.
This area right here. So now, however,
the area we're talking about is a very small area. As you walk across the street approaching New Leaf Market from the other side of Pacific Avenue, there is a small area. No, I think we've moved. Then what I'm talking about here as I talk to you now is there's no area. Oh, I think you may be right. Yeah, you are quite right. I'm sorry for you. There was an area, and it wasn't a free speech area. It was an area that was not covered by the downtown ordinance forbidden zone restrictions, where Becky Johnson and Robert Facer and Michelle all got tickets for singing music. We were singing the song, Downtown with Homeless Lyrics,
mm-hmm.
and we were trying to petition people to stop the anti-homeless laws about 4 or 5 years ago.
We weren't very loud.
And we weren't, you know, it was occasional music. It was the city backed a private person, Sean O'Reilly, who was another Sean. I don't think
he's... him as a cat's paw against
him. He lived above the area, and he claimed had been singing for hours, and we hadn't.
It was someone else he heard. It was Baskets Court. She's a complete idiot. She's not even real.
We actually had the longest infraction trial in Santa Cruz history.
Because they let you talk for 14 hours because you had just won that
I remember.
Appeal down for your Nazi.
In any case, you know, there that area is gone. That's what we're pointing out. There was no place all the way up to... I think didn't we find there was no place all the way up to... Soquel, not to on that, at least on that side of the street.
We didn't get that far, did we? We just stopped kind of at the bookshop Santa Cruz a little bit.
Well, I know we
stopped. No, you did a little bit.
We
more.
Stopped counting, and you're going to hear the rest of this tape where we are investigating. Where are there other spaces where we haven't yet counted everything? And
then the other side of the street was none.
And the other side of the street, since it's even before September, there were no places for people to sit legally or to protest politically by being seated or by having a table on the other side of Pacific Avenue. That's the Starbucks side of the street,
yeah,
if you will.
It's not legal for people to sit out in front of the
all the way down to, you know, Lulu Carpenters, all the way down to the end of the mall, at least where the buildings stop. Let's hear some more.
It's 7 squares away. So if you count,
how many were there before?
It was 5. It was 5 before. Now it's 7. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You can't. All this area is illegal to be in if you want to set up a table or play a guitar with an open guitar case. And if you count from the building, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, all this area is illegal. So this entire area, this open space, can no longer be used for non-commercial purposes at all.
How big did it used to be? Count off the square.
Well, it used to be, I would say, you had this area here that was legal to be in. Talking 3 by 6, 18 squares.
18 squares and now 0.
Yes, that's my understanding of the current laws, yes.
18 squares is, each square is 2 by 2 feet, so that's a total of, it's about, 18 is, 18 is 4 times 18, whatever that is, which is 40 and... 74 square feet, something like that.
Yeah.
So it's that's the only legal area, starting at the bookshop Santa Cruz, going all the way down to Jamba Juice to be. That was the only legal area. It's not legal anymore. But it was one of the that was one of the few legal.
You'll often see people there almost every day.
You'll often see people there almost
right.
every day because they're not enforcing it strictly,
you know,
making it seem like there's still a lot of places, but there isn't.
Right. It is only for that. And that is the reason that that was not mentioned at the city council meeting. And it's the shame of the people who are opposing this ordinance that they didn't mention that with a greater clarity. And I wasn't at that meeting. It was one of my problems, too. I mentioned it in my literature, but I didn't mention it in person, is that, as you say, Free, if you're trying to show how reasonable the new ordinances are going to be, and actually it's the same amount of space, but put some of them in boxes and paint them on the sidewalk so you can, there'll be no mistake, although the ordinances are pretty clear as it is. They say what you're going to be.
That will be great when they start painting on the street, because then you can see.
Well, or else people, worse, will become domesticated to it. That's the danger, see. You would think that it would be how outrageous, but in fact, you know, the question is, you know, how much hot water are people going to become accustomed to before they boil alive and realize they're being boiled alive? Had anybody said we are all illegal now? You have made us all illegal. Nobody said that at the city council meeting last Tuesday. That I know of. I mean, that is to say, for the last 9 months, and before that, of course, too, but most particularly the last 9 months, we've been illegal.
Great Marconi's been illegal the whole time.
Well, but he's been ignored.
Right, because they like him as a selectively enforced. But then a new cop came along, and he actually did his job correctly, and now he points up that these laws are unfair because now somebody's been off the street that everyone liked rather than a homeless person that no one likes who's off the street.
Right, but I think that it's also true that if it were clear and the city council had to address the issue of, you mean you have everybody is now illegal on the streets and that's going to be that's the same situation under the law. How is that going to change if you have these painted areas? Because there's not going to be any increase in space. It's going to be the same amount of space. You're just painting the areas in different places.
Yeah. Just step forward, though, because this is very confusing for an artist. He or she does not want to have to learn all these legal technicalities. I mean, that's why we're filming you to do it, because not very few other people know where the legal spaces are.
Well, I think.
And even you, it's like, oh, it's the crosswalks, not the cross. You know, there's the cash can, trash can now, not the trash can. It's very, very confusing to people. And some of them, it's 50 for those change machines and stuff.
And in fact, the change machines are another obstacle for people who are even performing and so forth.
But if it was simply laid out there, then people from out of town could even see, oh, you have to stand in a colored area and you won't get one of these big.
If you got to stand in a colored area,
that's
boy.
Right.
You stand in the colored area, you okay. But you got the colored area, and you got the other area where the good folks go. We don't allow any stinking performers and tablers. And you got your own little area. I don't see what your problem is, boy.
Throwing signs out there. You know they're not getting permits for all that crap.
Well, we're going to try to find that out. We don't know yet what we actually did. The other thing we did yesterday was we took down the names of every business and the address of every business with a sign on the mall between Lincoln and Laurel Street. And we should be going shortly to the city council offices to find out if they have permits for those areas. Just walk in and ask. Let's go in and say, like to see the permits. You know, and that's, you know, you can write it out.
Do that. I mean, this is the kind of thing you can do as a demonstration. Instead of just waving signs, you can actually show people how to go to government and get some results.
Yeah, that's true. And we're hoping to do a more of a sort of a video protest the way you were doing, Free, with the video, which unfortunately was turned 90 degrees, so you have to kind of crane your neck to look at it on IndieBay, but it's still there. You're listening to Free Radio, in case you wonder what this, where it's all coming from, and that is from we are at 101.3 FM, and I am Robert Norris, and phone number here is 427-3772. Have you been downtown, and do you find anything strange about these downtown ordinances, or are they just a reasonable regulation of people who are, should we say, best consigned to the shadows unless they follow the law? That's the question. Let's hear some more from May 24th.
There was another area here in front of Alfresco's, which looks it looks like an open space area.
You want it on camera?
Sure, why not?
I like to do that one because that's the main one.
Yeah. Well, this looks like an area you could use, but this is actually
hold on,
lease.
I don't think he's ready.
Hold on. And we're waiting for the video, as all you audio listeners.
I'm rolling.
Okay, so this is Alfresco's. And it looks like this whole area is a large open space. You might be able to find an area 7 feet or 7 squares, 14 feet from a crosswalk. Probably not, 14 feet from a kiosk. But actually, this whole area is taken up with chairs during the day. And so it becomes itself a leased zone. You can't be in unless you are a patron of Alfresco's. So this whole area is now illegal to perform in. It is illegal to register voters in. It is illegal to sit down in. If you want to sit down with, for example, if this woman and her children wanted to sit down, it would be illegal if they wanted to sit down next to a building. They would be committing a crime in Santa Cruz. It's still legal to sit on the planters, and that's good. But there are only about 3 of those planters left on Pacific Avenue. And that makes it a problem for people who are elderly, disabled, and so forth. If you look on the other side of the street, you'll see the sidewalks are less than 10 feet wide, which means anywhere on those sidewalks on that side, it is illegal to set up a table of any kind or to sit down on the sidewalk.
And you may recall a minute ago I mentioned that it's not the word intersection is not the sacred place from which you have to be 14 feet away. The actual wording of the display device ordinance is
specifically
intersection. You said.
You're right.
It's not a crosswalk. It is intersection or street corner. So there are actually all the crosswalks in Santa Cruz and downtown Pacific Avenue link one corner or intersection to another side of the street. So it actually, but there are a number of corners that don't have crosswalks, and there are a number of intersections that don't have crosswalks. I mean, you can walk across, but they aren't specifically marked as crosswalks. These areas are now also, and I had not been aware of this previously because I was saying, well, you have to be 14 feet from a crosswalk. No, you have to be 14 feet from an intersection or curb.
Very confusing.
Well, there's a lot of detail here, but what it all boils down to is there's virtually no place to be. Go ahead, Mike, you have something you wanted to say?
I'm wondering when we get the final figures for the amount of commercial space that's taken up down there and the actual amount of space that's given for freedom of expression under the Constitution. If we find a big discrepancy between those two, could this be the grounds for a lawsuit against the city?
Yes, possibly.
Well, it depends on who you talk to and who you can get interested and so forth. Free, you're the legal optimist
again,
on this.
In L.A., the homeless can sleep on the sidewalk because of one lawyer. If we had a lawyer of that caliber in this town that wasn't, involved in a Nazi salute case for 12 years, then we might have the same thing. There's a limited number of lawyers, so we really have to pick our spots.
Maybe the lawyer from L.A. could work on our case if he's a good guy.
Well, I think it's a woman. And the thing is, they made a settlement there because lawyers like to get paid, in a settlement. So therefore, it only applies to L.A. She won in appellate court, it would be statewide.
Well, there's a couple of provisos. I think I would correct your statement a couple of ways. First, Carol Sobel, who initiated this, got massive support from the L.A. ACLU and a couple of other civil liberties organizations. She wasn't alone. She initially did the groundwork, and a lot of it can be attributed to her passion and her determination and dedication to this. And that we had a similar situation. We were preparing the same attorneys that you talk about took the mock Nazi salute case. I know this is a
strategic issue.
You like playing, kind of taunting and so forth. But let's clarify, because this is something that people will be confused on. That's why I get upset with you sometimes, because I think you spread a kind of confusion on this respect and discredit what people are doing. The same two attorneys, we're talking David Beauvais and Kate Wells, who were indeed pursuing this Nazi salute case, which I think had its own payback, even though it eventually we were not able to get any funds from the city and the mayor for false arrest. That was the trial they found against us. It was a a combination of a biased judge and a jury that didn't understand basic constitutional rights. But in all candor, that's still under appeal. There is always a minuscule chance that there'll be some kind of reversal of that. I don't think much chance, but you never can tell. However, these two attorneys also took two lawsuits against the sleeping ban. They prepared, spent many hours engaging in preparation for a lawsuit to challenge the sleeping ban before the Jones case came up. And our problem with these lawyers, and it can be a problem with almost all lawyers, is that when they were pro bono, as they were in the mock Nazi salute case, they weren't being paid. And because they weren't being paid, they put this at the bottom of their priorities. And it was always the vacations that came first, and it was the medical thing, the trip to Thailand to get your teeth fixed, and blah, blah, blah. All this stuff, which, you know, you can't really begrudge lawyers for doing what they do. But in fact, the activists who were working and much more intensely on this, some of whom were homeless, most of whom were not. Most of us were housed working on these cases. We lost patience. We felt we could not continue if they, you know, we weren't going to continue putting our time into it if we couldn't get the attorneys to keep on schedule. They wouldn't do it. And so we gave up. We tried, and then we tried again, and we gave up again.
Was this in federal court?
Yeah, it was a federal lawsuit. It was an attempt to get an injunction against the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz through depositions of people who had no legal place to sleep. Shelters were full. We actually got the National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty involved. And if you go back to earlier Rathrop Spears broadside shows, you can hear this, this stuff discussed. I think we even interviewed the lawyers involved. So it's a difficult situation. I'm having the same problem with the issue of a tape recording at the city council, which has to do with, you know, the right of essentially a poor person with not much audio to go to the city council and record in an audible place, of which there is one spot, really, one or two spots, but both of them declared illegal, and you have to supposedly sit next to or stand next to your tape recorder. Yes, Mike?
When you had those direct experiences from the homeless people who stated they had to sleep outside, they had nowhere else to sleep, could you not have gone ahead with the lawsuit on your own? I mean, why?
No.
Why not?
Because you need all kinds of legal expertise to do that. You need people. You need to cite precedents properly. You need to file things. You need to pay for depositions and declarations. It's a costly business, and it's also requires, you know, you need to know where you're going. Presumably, a person with a lot of paralegal training might be able to do it.
Yeah, if you had good ground evidence.
It's hard to, an injunction is a complicated thing to get.
Injunctions are difficult, and you just have to put a bunch of money, too. They call it an undertaking. Yeah.
I mean, that's what we were trying to get, and we got some support from the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty. But they were sporadic, and it was kind of hard.
It's difficult, because this is a problem all over the United States. You know, the homeless can't really sleep, like I say, on the sidewalk in L.A., but that's only acceptable until they build more shelters.
And that's not true anyway, because they'll use other laws to go after you.
Well, yeah,
and they do.
But technically you can sleep on the sidewalk.
Yeah, I know. So I met somebody who was sleeping on the sidewalk in L.A., you know, the Skid Row down there, of course, too. But actually, he was some things were stolen from him while he was sleeping.
Yeah,
which is you know, which
that
is,
can happen.
Yeah,
continuing
yeah.
with our investigation of Santa Cruz.
Now, it's not illegal to kneel as this woman is doing over here, but she better not sit down, or it's a $157 crime. So watch out.
More than that.
Yeah, I think it actually is. Yeah. Which, of course, is outrageous and ridiculous, but it's designed to give the police maximum powers to go after the people that they don't like the look of. And that's how that is. Side of the Alfresco's kiosk in front of Pacific Wave. You might want to whip out the video. We have another, you know, here we have... So on this side of the Alfresco's and in front of Pacific Wave Surf Store, you have a huge open space, which you would think would be usable for people who want to perform or politically table or whatever. But in fact, the law means and says that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, everything on that side of the line is illegal to set up a display device on. Everything, not just on this side of the line is illegal, but it's illegal further because there will be chairs and tables here, and that marks the demarcation of alfrescos. And so you have to be 14 feet away from that.
From the chairs?
From the chairs. So then if you go further, there's a bench, and you have to be 14 feet away from the bench. This whole area is a forbidden zone for tabling or performing. Watch out. Yes, well, 10 feet allowed for some minor usage in this area, I would say, because you could be, there was, you could be here in this area and you could set up a table as long as you didn't, we weren't within 10 feet of the bench. Now it's 14 feet of the bench, forget it. So It makes it so that...
We lost area here, too.
Yes, you do. You lost area.
We don't know exactly how much, but...
No, we can measure it out, but it's... That's, also, see these meters here? This is a meter designed to encourage people to be selfish with their money. This is a meter designed to tell people, don't give away to poor people on the street. Put your money in a red meter instead. And, of course, it's all frilly, you know, positive change. What that means is you're really throwing your spare change into the merchants because it's their plan to drive away poor people from the downtown. This is so-called sculpture is also a forbidden object where you cannot be within 14 feet of it if you want to set up a table.
In other words, the red so-called real change meters are come under the sculpture part of this ordinance, which states you have to be 14 feet away from a sculpture. And so this is an interesting kind of neo-modern sculpture that they're sculpting out the path of the future there.
Play a guitar for a performance where you have a display device out, or even have a sit with a cap and a sign saying need spare change. That's all illegal now. So this entire open space has been monopolized by the downtown businesses and by conservative forces who want a particular destruction of the street culture of Santa Cruz.
And the First Amendment.
And the First
Amendment. This is the traditional public forum. They're stealing the First Amendment away from Americans in Santa Cruz. That's what's happening here.
I agree.
It's un-American activity by the merchants in this town and the city government. They should all be thrown out.
Hear, hear. Also, of course, this is another forbidden object that has been added in September, a trash can. And, of course, it's illegal to be within 14 feet of a crosswalk. Note, it is not illegal to have signs, business signs, within 14 feet of a crosswalk. They're right next to a crosswalk. In fact, it could be argued that they are, to some extent, a traffic hazard because of those signs, because of the blockage of the sidewalk. I mean, they're off to the side somewhat.
Honestly, the signs the merchants have out aren't really traffic hazards, but they're an example of special privileges that merchants have. I think I'm going to stop here. We've already spent almost three-quarters of the time on this. Probably should have spent about 10 minutes. My apologies to all you listeners who are getting a little tired of hearing all these numerical restrictions that, are ridiculous, but having mentioned it, we've mentioned it. You're tuned to Free Radio, and I want to remind you that phone calls do tend to brighten up the spirits of those in the studio, at least some of us. So if you call in, you might be able to help a struggling broadcaster feel a little more meaningful in his evening here, not to mention his guests. And the call-in number here is 427. That's what we call begging for attention. 427-3772. 427-3772 is the call-in number. And we'll see if anyone calls in here. But in any case, we will continue because that's the nature of what the show is. Let's jump now to the Project Homeless Connect. That was an annual ballyhooed event. It's not a bad event. I mean, it draws a bunch of people together to provide free food, homeless services, possible connections with housing, veterans benefits, dental and optical problems. I know that. Well, let me ask you, Michael. You were at this Tuesday event at the stadium, which was held this year for the first time. Belly up to the mic and tell us what your experience was there.
I thought overall it was a positive experience. There were lots of organizations who deal with the homeless and the poverty people. there.
Or who claim they deal with the homeless and poverty.
We have to give them some credit, before we criticize them. We have to give them some credit.
Yeah, for sure. But my concern always is, considering how much money they're getting, how much of it actually gets to homeless people in terms of meaningful and necessary services. That's always my issue.
I know. Well, that applies to all these nonprofit organizations. And, if you have the time, can do the maths on that. I mean, there are organizations around who do the maths on these nonprofit organizations, and you can get those figures.
I'll expect a full report from you next show.
Yeah, they're available.
Well, Robert, if these bureaucrats didn't have those jobs, they'd be homeless. So it is actually helping the homeless.
Well, not necessarily. They might just have to get another loan from dad or, cut back on something else.
Monica gets $80,000 just from the homeless service.
Monica Martinez is no longer head of the homeless legal service.
Oh, who is it now?
There are two of them that are kind of filling in. She now has moved up to this, whatever the Santa Cruz Community Counseling is now called. It's got another name. It's got a one-word name. I'm not sure. I think you may know what it is.
Composite or something?
It's another. It's ecstasy or, innovation or... any case, the problem with the poverty pimp industry is that it makes the public think that homeless people are either just... You can't solve homelessness by providing homes because it hasn't been done. All this money has been spent. And so they actually serve to disadvantage homeless people by turning the public against homeless people by saying, look at all the money that's missing. We haven't gotten anywhere. It must be character flaws in the homeless people. It must be they're naturally sinful. They're naturally evil. Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. And if there were no shelter under INRI ICARN, it would be legal for the homeless to sleep anywhere in town.
And
because there is no shelter. There's no legal alternative.
That kind of argument I don't think holds water, but it should. I think it should hold water, but I don't think it will. Your faith in the legal system is touching, always touching.
You have to fight for it, Robert.
Yeah.
That's another thing. The homeless are, I just read that article that Ryan Hoffman did up on Indy Bay. It's not in the local section.
Ryan Hoffman is a Monterey Peninsula College guy, or Monterey
State University. Yeah, he did a paper on homelessness.
State University.
Quite interesting.
Who wrote about Santa Cruz homelessness. Yeah.
Yeah. And how they're criminalizing it here in this city. I forgot what I was going to say about... What were we talking about before?
No, you're not the only one who loses track, Avery. Well, let's see. You were talking about... I don't recall, actually, what point you were trying to make. We were talking... and I think I've forgotten...
We were talking about that homeless...
We were talking about Project Homeless Connect.
Yeah,
and we're talking about whether poverty pimps should be held accountable for all the money that they are essentially not getting to the homeless. And...
Well, the class, he said it was a class war. The merchant class is going after the homeless class. Oh, the homeless are not organized in any fashion other than, say, you and a few others in town who aren't really homeless.
No, we're not really organized.
And there's, so they don't get their rights. You have to fight for them. You can't just hide.
You always have to fight for your rights, but the idea that the legal system is going to give you your rights.
No, they're not going to give it to you. You have to fight them, and you can't do it in this town because the legal system in this town is corrupt as hell. You have to go outside the town.
Well, even the legal, I would say the Supreme Court is as corrupt as hell, too. So you're really ultimately screwed unless you get a lot of people behind you. Then suddenly, lo and behold, the legal system starts to respond because it doesn't want to see itself lynched, and burned
at sundown.
Or you make
them look completely ridiculous in the press.
There is something short of that, too. But you do need massive power and pressure to deal with it. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. Hang on a second, Frank. We are in the, you're in the listening to Free, Michael and Robert. And the call-in number is 427-3772. Go.
Again, I forgot.
I have the same problem.
Fight for yourself. And
I was criticizing your idea that there's somehow a legal avenue. ICORN will protect you. That's a decision that came down like 15 years ago that said you have the right to use a necessity defense if there's inadequate shelter,
so it makes it
against camping laws. So, that's true, but people don't use a necessity defense.
I was going to say, okay, what you can do legally, the homeless, they can be downtown in certain areas, so if they were down there en masse, you have to threaten them with something worse that's legal to get them to back down. You can't just go hat in hand, and they're not going to give you anything because they don't want the homeless.
I think we all agree in the studio.
But a lot of other people, out of Huff meetings, everybody always goes, oh no, don't confront me, I'll never get anywhere. No, these people do not want the homeless. You have to have some kind of a power over them that they cannot defeat, and then they will come to the table and deal with you. Just like with strikes and unions.
I think
withhold your work.
I mean,
you have to have some kind of real power.
Mm-hmm. Michael?
Well, some of the power is in public opinion, and you said, Free, that that some fairly recent public information shows that the public are against all these restrictions on our artists downtown. So why don't we do a petition, along Pacific Avenue and get as many signatures as we can to bring to the council?
It's been done dozens of times.
It doesn't always work. But a ballot initiative that would restrict the power and take it away from the city council and give it to the residents, because we do have ballot initiatives in this charter city, we can control how our city is run.
Right, and that isn't necessarily a bad idea. It's just a costly one and requires a huge amount of time and
dedication,
energy.
That's the thing, time and energy.
No,
yeah.
It's time and dedication. Energy. We actually tried that twice in the late 90s. We tried
a ballot initiative?
Slavic ban initiative twice, and we failed to get the signatures.
The numbers? Yeah.
We couldn't get it on the ballot. You need about 6,000 or 7,000 signatures, and they have to be registered voters. Well,
right.
you need about 4,000 registered voters in the city, which means you need another 2,000 or 3,000 because you've got spoiled signatures.
Right.
It's very hard
to
do.
Well, it's 10%, so you need more than 6,000.
Not in the 90s, you didn't.
Yeah, right, because it was just lower numbers.
Not sure what they're...
And that's going to be difficult with the gentrification.
In any case, again, the whole idea of the whole legal framework, and I understand you're...
Well, this isn't legal. This is legislative. This is getting it before the voters, before
you're
the public,
talking about,
and allowing
yeah,
the people to do it, not city council, where you spend all your time.
Right. I don't.
You spend a lot of time there.
No, not really. I've been there for a month, the city council.
Yeah, but I just don't think city council is the way to do it, because they're against it.
Well, most of my time is not spent at city council. In fact, most of my time is spent denouncing city council's behavior and also encouraging. But I think you're right. I think what you need to do is go to other power groups. And that's, for example, what Michael, the activist who was previously involved with the, who was the CEO, I believe, for a very conservative.
Oh, you talked about this guy.
Michael Schmidt was doing. He would go to groups of hostile neighborhood groups and talk about how absurd the sleeping ban was. You have to going to go into the groups of hostile people and deal with those issues.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking of the downtown ordinance. If you're sleeping ban, you're not going to get any support in the public.
I think you'll get far more support for the sleeping ban than you will for the downtown ordinance repeal, because people understand you have to sleep, but they also feel that, you don't need to have the right to panhandle. You don't need to have the right to sit.
Yeah, that's true.
You don't need to have all
it's
that
stuff.
It's
hard to know what's going to fly, because the public does support the artist being down there, but how much support is the question?
I mean,
the performers aren't even organized, and we're not talking about the homeless here. We're talking about artists and people middle class.
Right. Well, of course, my entree into this has always been homeless people, and I've had a division with some other activists who are trying to support pretty solely the rights of performers, because they feel that, one, that's the group they're with, and two, they're more likely to get a victory there. And indeed, from 1994 to... Well, until 2003, there was essentially the setbacks, which were less than, I think they were 6 feet from a building, were not enforced against the performers so much.
Right, they were less, right? Panhandling was a greater setback.
Oh, I think panhandling...
It was 14
panhandling,
all the time for panhandling.
No, it's been... I think it was 6, I believe, for both sitting and for others. The setbacks were the same, but they were not enforced against street performers so much, unless they didn't like the street performer.
Yeah.
And there was a general, and there was no move-along law between 1994 and 2003, so
Well, this is difficult, because there is a lot of public support for getting rid of those stupid ordinances, but how do we organize that into some kind of... I mean, it's not going to happen from Huff. It's not going to happen from Tom Noddy's organization.
I don't see a lot of public support. I mean, I would like to.
I see it on the topics forum, because the people that normally go all over the homeless are getting shot down on the topics around the Great Morgani. I mean, there was a lot of support.
But that was it. It was just about the Great Morgani.
Right,
it wasn't about anything else.
Exactly. But, I mean,
that's been dealt with. Now they're going to allow the Great Morgani
to
come
back in his
little box.
Yeah, they're going to make a special, like you said, a little box for him.
And that means everybody else gets to, kiss their asses goodbye.
Well, somebody else could just steal that box from him all day long.
I think they'll find a way to reserve the box. It'll be Morgani's box,
Morgani's box.
Anyway, so let's go to Project Homeless Connect. That's where we were before, and we're getting a little sidetracked back to the same issue. Not that it is an important issue. Project Homeless Connect usually gets almost more social service workers than homeless people. They had social service workers escorting homeless people around to different services. And, you know, part of it I mock, but I also have to, as Michael here suggests, got to give them credit because on that one day they are helping people. And they also spend a number of them, not a lot of volunteers are there just for that day. But there are also a number of ongoing agencies that have in their own way struggled to support the rights and basic services for homeless people. And so, and that includes the Homeless Lack of Services Center, you know.
Well, let's not forget the churches as part of their religious mandate.
And that includes Father Joel Miller, who was there. And it does not include Lynn Robinson, who was wandering around, I'm told, but I luckily didn't run into her because I might have had to pull out my tape recorder, and that might have been quite a scene. Actually, that's a joke. It's okay to record somebody in public places, even if Lynn Robinson doesn't want you to. But she knows, which probably she knows best, she'll simply say nothing.
Anything.
Exactly. But let's see if we are in the right spot here. And I think we are. Let's see.
24th.
Yes, we are. Let's go back to May 14th and hear some Project Homeless Connect interviews.
May 20th, 2014. I'm here at the Project Homeless Connect.
May 20th. 2014.
About 11:20, looking for my cable, and there's all kinds of other things happening. There's behavioral health, suicide prevention, clothing vouchers, veteran services, employment, medical, legal services, Janus, court referral, friends outside are part of legal services. There's dental, there's dentists, there's employment, there's vision care, housing, like I mentioned that before. Hey, man.
Yes, please.
And there's a lot of other shit. My mind is racing as I rush to find a place to sit with my table. So we have a successful victim of the 180 program. Your name, sir?
My name's Crow. Well, my old lady actually got the housing. I'm homeless forever. That's my point. But I'm not
your vehicle, generally?
Past 25 years of my life, I guess, including Dead Doria. Yeah.
You're abandoning your vehicular life?
No. It's Red needed a place to go. She was dealing with the breast cancer, still dealing with the doctors. So she needed a place to go, and we finally got a place.
Where are you looking?
180.
Where are you?
In Watsonville.
And how is it?
I just had a couple neighbors, mostly people who are, like, you know, clean and sober, living, and the first thing they do, they want you to get thrown out, you know. Even though I've been sober for the past 6 months, no alcohol, doing good.
For you, that's quite something.
Red has stopped on and off, she drinks very little, that's good for her.
Right.
You know, I am an alcoholic, I can't do it. So I gotta be sober.
Completely sober or else completely drunk!
Yeah, I mean, what's the point of drinking if you get fucked up?
I guess. I'm not much of a drinker, smoker
good.
Occasionally.
No,
anyway,
like how you are, who you are.
Want to help me carry my shit over to the table?
Yes, I would love to.
All right, then we'll be back with more reports from you or somebody else soon. We've been talking with?
The Crow.
So you have positive things to say about the 180 program?
Yes, actually, Linda, our project manager, has been very great, and Dolores also. Dolores and Linda have actually, out of all the programs and people that we've seen through the years and years and years, the Project 180 in about, I would say, almost a year now, it must have took like 10 months, we finally got a place in March, or she got a place in March, and it's all good for now, you know? As long as I don't choke out those, you know, clean and sober living type of people like to call the cops or parking authority or the landlord on a constant basis over bullshit.
Here, here. And we've been talking with
Dad Crow.
Thank you, Crow.
I see a cop and I asked, you know.
So it's about 15 to 12, and I've just been, criticized by one of the staff members for setting up here without having given them advance notice, even though this is a vacant table and no one else is using it. I don't know if there are a lot of them around, but I invited her to come over and discuss this issue on tape. She declined. And instead, we're talking with a man who has been homeless, actually was one of the original homeless activists in town when I came to town and began working in town in 1988. What's your name, sir?
Doug Bradford.
And you were in your vehicle, living in your vehicle in the fall of 1988 in the summer, as I remember.
Yes, I was.
And I think Linda Edwards was also trying to live in her vehicle, and the two of you hooked up?
Yeah, we were both living in the same vehicle. We shared it, and we were together.
And you were saying, you were looking over some of these pieces of literature we have, one of which suggests priorities and how Huff should proceed to address issues, and you had some thoughts.
Yeah, I noticed that they mentioned, opening up the campgrounds to homeless people, and I think that's a really good idea because it gave us a place to cook, gave us a place to shower and, wash up and take care of all our needs in a safe place, and it gave us a dignity, and we, because we were paying for it at the campgrounds, and it made us feel better that we were, doing our part and being, still, we didn't feel like as we were as homeless.
What campground was that?
That was both Henry Cow and the state park, Seabright State Park?
Are those hard to get into now?
Oh, yeah, they have all reservation area things now, and they kind of, stopped homeless people from even coming in the campgrounds, They just picked and choose, I guess, who could come in the wintertime. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Doug, thanks. I'm going to get back to scuttling around with this table.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you, man. So we've been ordered to move our table away from this area at the insistence of, what's your name?
My name is Maggie.
Here we go. I remember Maggie. Yes, thank you. Yeah, we were told beforehand, apparently by Steve, not just today, that we could be here. So I'm sorry if it didn't really meet the requirement.
Did you get the participation sheet?
I don't know. But
did you get the participation sheet?
I don't. Excuse me, Maggie. Maggie, I heard you. I understand.
Everybody here is filled out.
I understand.
All right.
Becky, you're not going to hear my answer. You're just going to walk away.
The answer
is Becky can answer that question better than I. All I know is that she told me that she was in contact with Steve Plaich a week or two ago. He invited her to come. I don't know if she got the sheet or not. We're not attempting to sabotage your process.
I understand that, but the process is we had a meeting, and at the meeting, at the steering committee, said make sure Robert gets invited. That way he doesn't feel left out.
And thank you for doing that, if that's what you did. I don't recall getting it, but she might have gotten
it. Let me finish. Yeah. We got your email address, and we sent you the form, and we never heard from you. So we don't have a table for you. So that's how it's going to be.
Well, that's fine. I mean, it does put us a little bit in the back room, but, Brenda's there, too. I suppose that's fine.
Yeah.
And I understand your initial concern.
Yeah.
But, I'm glad that since we were told there was lots of space, we didn't get the impression you must fill out this form or else you're not going to be able to come on. I didn't know if I got the form.
In the future, there will always be a need to follow the procedure, that everybody gets a form. That way we know who's coming and have a table for them.
I know.
So we have a table for advocacy every year, and that's where you're going
to
go.
I understand that that's what you're wanting to do.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Maggie.
Bye.
And that was Maggie McKay, the boss of the whole Project Homeless Connector, an influential person who initially demanded, first of all, didn't want me to set up at all, then demanded we move from the place where I was setting up at a vacant table where I was told to go by greeter Steve Plaich, who has traditionally had a rather strong role or prominent role in the Project Homeless Connect. And again, she wants to corral people into little spaces where they're going to be. And I can understand part of it is trying to organize so you know who's going to come and so forth. But on the day of the actual event, to harass people when you have the space is abusive. And it simply shows her real political agenda, which, her in its power, as Michael is saying off to the side here. Anyway, let's hear some more from the Project Homeless Connect. I guess it was a week ago now. The 20th. It was a week and 2 days ago.
So Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs has a table outside. They apparently aren't letting him set up in here, perhaps because he didn't give them advance notice. And we have been moved to a table in deeper into the stadium. Yes.
And that's a significant point because Keith McHenry's Food Not Bombs table provides more services more frequently to homeless people, I would say, on a more regular basis, twice a week. There's a healthy, fairly tasty meals. What would you say, Michael? How do you feel about the Food Not Bombs meal on Saturday and Sunday at 4 at the post office?
I feel the food is above average for the homeless people, and it is a good service. It's giving them pretty decent food to eat. And helping their health in general.
And also, it doesn't require ID checks. You don't have to go through a security gate to get it. You don't have to sign up weeks in advance to be there. You can set up your own table nearby if you want. So it's a much more relaxed atmosphere there. And it's much more a voluntary atmosphere. And frankly, it's a much friendlier atmosphere. And a much less managed atmosphere. And that is the real problem, that these social service providers, who are now working closely with police parole and district attorneys and city attorneys and security guards, are now involved in control and management rather than really providing services and providing real options. And they're, along the way, they're taking away civil liberties, which is, you know, an additional concern.
Now, as far as I know, Food Not Bombs weren't actually in the building itself. They were just outside somewhere. Was that because they weren't allowed in?
That's what I was saying, and that's was the truth, yes. The Food Not Bombs were not allowed to be... They were not only allowed not only to be inside the building, they were shoved to the corner, as I understand it, kind of off to the side, way off to the side. I had to walk all the way to the corner to find Food Not Bombs. And Food Not Bombs was providing literature and was also providing... food for people. So were the people in the stadium. They had a sort of a little vegetarian and carnivore friendly food service, which they were doing, and it kind of had an interesting look to it. It looked like the kind of food you get at a baseball game or something, you know, where you kind of go up and you order a hot dog and so forth. Unlike a cafeteria line, which is what Project Homeless Connect has been in the past. So that was nice.
Yeah, and that's probably because Food Not Bombs is not part of the establishment so much so, where they all get together and boost each other's, ego or whatever it is. And that's more than likely the reason they weren't allowed in, even though they are a good service to the homeless.
And I'm sure Maggie explained that, I'm not sure, I suspect she probably told them, sign up months in advance, or you didn't respond to our email or something. The only issue really is whether there's room there, not whether they're following the rigorous procedures that she has decided are somehow a prerequisite to be there. Anyway, let's move on from these bureaucrats to the actual people, and maybe we can learn some more.
With photographer and video journalist Jeremy Leonard, also a community activist who sometimes keeps a low profile and sometimes not. What's the story today, Jeremy?
Well, you know, today I'm just here enjoying the positive vibe of this Project Homeless Connect. It's easy to get bogged down in all of the negativity if you read, you know, the Sentinel comments and all of that. And
my flyers.
Sometimes, but you're not as bad as some, but it's definitely, it's easy to get bogged down in all of the negativity in town here in Santa Cruz. And this is such a great thing that we have going on here. Of course, an annual event, Project Homeless Connect, and I've seen some people get real help here today, so it's been really nice to check it out.
All right, anything coming up that we should be expecting in terms of work you've done over the last year? I know you were the video journalist who dealt with the Northwestern trip that you and Brent took to find different sanctuary villages, so to speak.
Yeah, it's definitely true, and I've noticed that Brent is sort of in a rebranding mode. He's not calling it the Sanctuary Camp anymore. It's called the Sanctuary Village, and of course,
soon the sanctuary city, and then the sanctuary metropolis.
Exactly.
So, good village, right?
And yeah, now it's the sanctuary village.
Village.
I know.
Nice.
Who said that? Hillary Clinton.
There you go.
Former Secretary of State. Are you joking or something?
No.
Where'd you stick your tongue out?
I'm making a sarcastic of what you're saying, but not of you.
What did I say?
No, you talked about the sanctuary village. But let's not be negative. It's a positive day.
It's a positive
day. By the way, you guys met.
Hi, my name is
I thought it was a positive day. Sorry.
James, very nice to meet you.
How I said was Billy.
It doesn't matter. If you make a criticism, I'll criticize what you say. Sorry, that happens. That's what goes on, man. I mock your criticism, not you, James. You have to understand the difference. What's that? I'm sorry. No, I didn't hear you.
Okay, let's start over.
Go ahead.
Robert, how are you today?
I'm good. And yourself?
Who is this guy?
Well, this is Jeremy. Jeremy, this is a man who's been working on home. Well, you've been
working on nothing.
He's working. Let him describe himself. That's good. Yeah. I'll let you guys talk.
That was a sort of a brief, somewhat bristly encounter with what I call Thunderlung's Jim Purcell, who was an activist with us 20 years ago when we were occupying, what do we call it, Freedom Park. It was an area now occupied by the Gateway Shopping Center. It's across, it was Caltrans property. We set up a sanctuary village, if you will, or a sanctuary camp, or whatever you want to call it. And we camped there for a number of days as part of a statewide effort. Or we had connections with people in different cities as well, I believe, or at least we got some support from the California Homeless Network back in, I think it was 93, and or might have been 92. And we were eventually arrested by the police and removed, but they didn't. We were found guilty of nothing. They dropped the charges. Again, the point being that, you know, they can only effectively criminalize people who don't defend themselves and who aren't at a high-profile position around these basic survival issues. Or at least that was the case 20 years ago. It's become more difficult for folks when larger numbers of people have stood up, as in the Occupy movement or the Peace Camp 2010 movement of 4 years ago, the Occupy movement of 2 years ago. And, yeah, I mean, that was a... James is a fellow who he gets very upset when I criticize veterans. He gets very upset when I criticize anything he says often. But, you know, we still have different points of view. Let's get this caller and then your thoughts, Michael. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
My name is Brent Adams.
Hey, Brent, how you doing?
Hey, I just wanted to correct you very quickly. There's a big distinction between of what the sanctuary model camp is. And I, all due respect, there are various, you know, camp encampments where people congregate with tents, and that's commonly referred to as a kind of a tent camp. So when they get bigger than their tent cities, sanctuary camp specifically has a set of very specific elements that we've aggregated throughout from successful ones out throughout the country: porta potties, garbage receptacles that are emptied with a basic service, so people aren't taking the trash down the street themselves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also has a single entry point where people can be coming and going and be managed, so there's a level of safety, an agreement around rules that the community agrees on, and a boundary fence. Those are the basic elements, and then support from the larger, at least some elements of the community. So I just want to correct you when you said that the Freedom Park, or whatever you're calling it, was a sanctuary camp. I'm a little defending that concept, just because it's something that we really need to distinguish between a tent city and a sanctuary camp.
Although I think some tent cities will have similar ideas about, you know, making sure there's safety and so forth.
No, because we have several examples of tent cities in Santa Cruz in the past that were not sanctuary camps. Tent cities often don't have trash or porta potty services.
No, that's true.
And that's one of the reasons we have we would like to see free tent cities where people could set up and experience liberty in terms of sleeping. But what we encounter is elements of disease around fecal matter and an inability to mitigate trash. You know, some people might be able to do it really well. So the easy way to do that is to partner with a trash service and a porta potty service. And
I think there are more problems with the police than with trash removal in the past. That hasn't been the problem.
The reason you have problems with police, they come down because of very specific elements. That's why there's this hurdle that we've got that we try to jump over now within the community of homeless advocates within the country. This new hurdle where we're trying to mitigate the problems. It's not unlike the problems of the drum circle. The newspaper came out and said the drummers were responding, that there was poop happening, drug sales happening, alcohol use around the drum circle. So what we tried to do was mitigate those by creating a set of rules.
All right, let me interrupt you for a minute, Brent, because, well, first of all, I appreciate your calling in. We have about 7 minutes left in the show, and Michael here wants to respond to you, and I also do, but I'd love to have you on the air on Sunday to talk about this in greater length if you want to call in, because it does require a longer conversation.
I've got to go, so I'll listen on the air.
Before you go, let me ask you this. What's happening on June 2nd with the Santa Cruz 11? Brent? Okay. I wanted to announce that because that is coming up, but we can probably try to get that on Sunday.
I think Sanctuary Village is a better word. Camp in brings to mind.
I don't care about the PR shit, you know. I really don't, you know, and I understand how it can be important to some people. My point is that I don't think it's because you know, I think the Sentinel is going to try smearing you six ways from Sunday, even if you have a porta potty, as Peace Camp 2010 did. So, in attempting to spend your time placating the Sentinel, and you know, trying to show you're mitigating all the circumstances, it's not that it's a bad thing to do, but in a way, it is a hopeless task unless your primary point is getting the power to maintain the camp where it is, or the village, whatever you want to call this situation. And tried to do so by going to the authorities, hat in hand, I'm getting all the permits. It's a way of showing to the community how unreasonable the authorities are, for sure. But to expect that it actually is going to have a positive outcome is unrealistic, in my view. And I know that Brent and I have a difference of opinion on this. And I got to say that I do respect all the energy and time that Brent has put into this stuff. What I don't like is when we get into a conflict about the value of protest and I get personally attacked or Huff gets personally attacked around these issues, because I think we're all working for the same thing. And that can be a problem in differences of opinion between people. But make no mistake, the activist who just called in has a great amount of not only goodwill, but huge amount of energy that he has put into this and prior efforts to defend the rights of musicians, performers, people outside. And that really should count for more than any differences that activists get into, because, you know, there's no point in fighting each other. It really is a mistake. And Brent faces 4 years in prison for simply being present in a building, which I was present in and hundreds of others were, or at least scores of others, several hundred at least. And he has to go to court again on, I guess it's June 2nd or June 3rd, and fight this endless battle. And the fact that he's continuing to stand up for people at the same time which makes him a high-profile person and criticized, I think is courageous on his part. So I don't want to go into this too thickly, because I also disagree with him on a number of issues and would call him a fathead on a number of issues, no doubt. But that doesn't matter. You know, that's not the issue. The issue is, we'll leave that issue aside. There's only about 4 minutes left in the show, and I hope that, you know, we get into more of a discussion next time. Brent is always invited to call in, as are the rest of you out there, those of you who are listening. I'm going to end the show by playing a few more interviews, and coming soon is Uncle Dennis, no doubt, trumpeting his way into the studio and into your hearts. So if you want to get more information on the kinds of issues we're talking about, get in touch with Huff by going onto the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org. Give a call to the Huff line if you want to volunteer, 423-HUFF. We need people to work on Public Records Act requests and plan the kinds of protests that will mobilize the power that you heard Free talking about earlier. Any final thoughts, Mike?
No, not really. Just good to be here.
All right. Let's hear some more from the project Homeless Connect. Brent and I, it should be said, were at opposite ends of the same table. It was a very long table, and he was working on Sanctuary Village, and I was working on civil rights around homeless, restoration of civil rights for homeless people. And in a way, it's kind of the same struggle. And I'm not trying to jump on Brent's bandwagon here in any way, and I know he's not trying to jump on mine, so we'll move right along here, and here's some more from Project Homeless Connect.
Becky Johnson, who is inviting people to sign our call for independent human rights observers. Becky, you were telling a person who just signed that there's a particular concern that people should have.
Yeah, I'm urging. Well, we have a number of petitions on the table, and I hope people take the time to sign all of them. But if they've only got time to sign one, I hope that the first one that they sign is this call for an independent human rights observers to come to Santa Cruz. Very recently, the UN Commission on Human Rights passed a statement condemning cities like Santa Cruz to criminalize homelessness.
And I had to interrupt that because we have people coming to the table, but we did get one person from Santa Barbara who reports having lost her home. She was then arrested on three occasions, if I'm not mistaken, had to spend the night in jail for being on the streets. So that was the, yes, she nods. She's not terribly excited about, you know, saying who she is at this time, but that's her account of what happened. So it impacts people who were housed, who thought they were doing just fine, and then they learned that it ain't that way. Yeah, I call it hostile fatality, but that's my bias.
I'm getting some hostilities from this. I can see the vibe. Sometimes I'll